Hey guys, Kirk Short here with another episode, if you will, of Real Conversations with Kirk Short. And I am pleased to have my guest here, which is Ross Lee. And Ross Lee owns Lee Property Group, which does appraisals. And Ross Lee also owns a company called Asset Insurance Management. And they are an insurance broker. So I thought this would be a nice little episode with him here working with me, talking about a little bit of both, appraisals and a little bit about insurance.
Thank you, Kurt, for having me.
Absolutely. So for people that are listening in, since we're going to go talk about this whole appraisal thing first, how long have you been in the business? How long have you been doing appraisals?
Approximately 33 years.
And what is an appraiser?
An appraiser goes out and inspects a property, and they can look for different types of value. But with the real estate companies, typically we're looking for market value, and we're dealing with the purchases of homes or the refinance of homes, and we're estimating what the market value of the home is at the time of the inspection.
Okay. I'm a realtor and I give valuations for houses to sit there and sell. So shouldn't I be considered an appraiser?
Well, I always tell everybody there's a lot of good realtors out there, and I can estimate value at $100,000, and you can come in and say it's $100,000. And what I've always told everybody, probably the biggest difference between my estimating market value and you doing a market analysis is I can go to court and prove it.
Okay. For those of you that are watching, one of the things and why I felt it was important to have Ross here, even as a realtor, I've been doing this business for well over 20 years now. I've been around the business a lot longer. And
I've kind of watched you grow up in the business.
You have.
Because I've worked with your dad.
But with all the transactions I've done, I still seek advice, right? We run into properties and we do things, you know, where I'm going in and I'm creating valuations and I'm trying to stretch things because you have to sit there and prove to a bank a worth for a property. Now, granted, appraisers, it's not a specific science for value. Would you
correct,
agree?
Correct.
And so it's a guesstimation, but I figured as a professional on my end, there's times that I need the advice of an appraiser on a property because it's a bit different. And you know what and when you can step out of the norms to try to find value on properties. It's one thing if I've got a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,200 square foot house in an area that had recently 4 or 5 other properties sold that are 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,200 square feet on the main floor. It's pretty easy to sit there and find those types of values.
Correct.
But sometimes you run into problems like, a house I had talked to you about before that was sitting here and it was 2,000 and some square feet because they converted a garage into living space, added a whole new separate detached garage and wood shop and pool in an area where the other houses were 300-400 square feet smaller on average than this house. And how far out can I stretch to sit there and find, you know, what I need before I stretch too far? And you helped me really good with that. So the reason I preface all this is because what I want you to do is to share with the people that are listening as an appraiser, when you have to justify a property, what are your general constraints that you have to sort of fit within that at least that initial bubble that you try to fit within before you start doing other things?
Well, people buy in neighborhoods for a lot of different reasons. They buy for schools, they buy for family, they buy because the neighborhood has large home or trees. But at the same time, they don't want to go into a neighborhood and drop $50,000 over the highest property in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to get that kind of money out of it, right, unless they live there for 30 years or whatever. So when we're doing appraisals, we try to stay with similar properties and stay within that neighborhood's boundaries, or similar type homes as far as size, age, condition, and stay within a reasonable value range. But the other thing is, we try to stay, you know, within 6 months or a year if we can. If we get into investment properties and 2 to 4 families, then that kind of goes out the door and we go back in time. But as far as just a typical 3-bedroom, 2-bath home out in Westlink, you know, we're going to try to stay in the Westlink area.
Right.
And then what you're seeing today is, we deal with past history. We try to look at current listings, but we still have to deal with past history. And right now, the market's just going really crazy. If the house is in great shape, and especially if the realtor has done a great job on their market analysis and they've priced it to get the most money they can for their customer, but at the same time, they have to be within reason for that neighborhood. And if everybody's done what they're supposed to do, the houses are selling really quick.
Right.
And the houses that have no maintenance to be done and they're ready just to walk in and move into, they're on the market very, very short times. And you're also seeing multiple contracts. And a lot of times in some areas, you're even seeing those contracts that are $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 over what the house was even listed for.
Right.
So it makes it really difficult as an appraiser to come in this changing market and estimate what that value is. And you're right, you know, how much further over the listing price is market value really at?
So let's talk about that. We're in this market that we're seeing multiple offers, right? We're seeing short days on market. Like one of the houses I just valued, median days on market is 7 days. That's quick. You can tell that most properties probably had multiple offer type situations and they're doing it. I think most people that listen, you know, try to sit there and say, well, isn't the appraised value of a house, isn't that based upon what the market says that house can sit there and bear? And if people are willing to pay X dollars for a house, why is that not a consideration? Why is that not a value? Because, you know, what I've noticed in this market too, you know, I just had a property sold for 82. The appraisal comes in at 80,000. Well, it was immediately sold, multiple offers. Why does that happen? Or how are your constraints different, you know what I mean, from that?
Well, you're right. You know, you always think if you have someone that is willing to pay, the house is listed for $100,000, but if you have somebody that's willing to pay $105,000, that does that make it market value? No, it just means that that particular buyer is willing to pay $105,000.
Okay.
The one thing that we can't put any type of value on is the motivation of the buyer.
Right.
You know, are they buying because their sister lives 2 houses away?
Right.
Are they buying for a school that's a block away? Those type of things we can't put any type of value on. The other thing that makes it really tough in some neighborhoods, especially when you start getting into probably over 300,000 or so, is when you have out-of-town buyers coming in, if they're coming off the West Coast or the East Coast, they have cash in hand, and our properties in Wichita are probably some of the most reasonable priced in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And our quality of our houses is really great too, compared to a lot of areas of the country.
Right.
So the people coming in, they think, oh, this is a steal. You know, this house, you know, it's 300,000 here, but where I come from, it's $500,000.
Right.
They think, oh, I'm going to buy this no matter what, because it's what I was used to.
Right.
So they're willing to pay over the market value, which is all right, because that means they just have to come to closing with cash.
Right. So,
which also messes up the market later on.
Right. So what effectively happens is I may not be able to prove this $300,000 value now, but for the next property, since this one sold for $300 over here and he was willing to pay the extra for it, that now becomes a comp and may allow the next house to be closer to that $300 mark, right?
That's
because
true.
Because now you have a new comp.
Well, that's true because that's how you start seeing appreciation also.
Okay. If you've got people that are listening in and they're asking themselves, okay, I've got my house. What can I do for my house for an appraiser to get the best value out of it? I know when I sell a house and I talk about, you know, the appraiser's going to come in and look at my house. It's really important, again, keep the yards moat. Basically, have the house in showing condition like you would for a buyer for an appraiser, because you want the appraiser to see the house in the best light possible. Would you agree that that has an impact when an appraiser is trying to decide how high, how low they may go based on condition and other things?
Yes, and probably condition is always a wild card.
Yeah.
Everybody looks at it different. If you have updated decor, updated electrical lighting or plumbing fixtures, floor coverings, if they've all been updated in the last 5, 6, 7 years, you're okay. But if you're updated on your main level of your house and then you go down in the basement and you have 1970 orange shag, that's going to have an effect on the value as the house as a whole.
Okay. So now you opened up a whole nother area, and that's talking about updates. In our market, right, different markets afford value to different things. I want to first talk about, I think, interior updates, and then I want to talk about outbuildings, because I know you and me had a nice conversation about value of outbuildings. So updates on interior stuff. So let's just say bathrooms, kitchens, you know, I do my outside, you know, I've got my outside patio all set up and I do the outdoor kitchen outside or things like that. What type of updates can I do to a house and see a better bang for the buck coming back to me in value of house in your estimation versus maybe some things that sounds good, but they really aren't?
If you're in a price range, we'll say the low 100s, or maybe from 80 to 130, 140, I wouldn't spend the money on granite in a kitchen because the typical home in that neighborhood is not going to have granite.
Okay.
So it's going to be hard to get the $4,000 or $5,000 that you're going to dump into granite for a kitchen countertops.
It may sell the house quicker, but it won't get you the value.
Correct. Now, if you're in a $300,000 plus neighborhood, you're probably already going to have granite, but if you don't, that would be a good investment.
Because it's going to hurt you.
It's expected.
And it's going to hurt you maybe if you don't have it.
Yes.
Okay.
There's a lot of issues with laminated hardwood floors or true hardwood floors.
Yeah. And when you say laminated, we're not talking about like what people would traditionally think about with the floating floors and the pergo. We're talking about like a wood engineered
and the engineer and the
floor
engineered
versus
floor,
a hardwood.
An engineered floor versus a 3/4 inch oak or pine flooring that's been installed in, that's nailed in. A lot of people preferred the engineering flooring anymore. Cost-wise, it's less.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
And the reason they prefer it is because it's easier maintenance. The finish will hold up for extended years.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people like some type of a wood flooring in their living room, dining room, kitchen area. I probably would not spend the money to put it in your bedrooms.
Yeah.
I think most people probably, when they drop their feet off of the bed in the morning, they like to hit a carpet.
Right.
And then you also get sound barrier too with a little bit of carpet.
Yeah.
So if you say, hey, I'm going to take my whole house to engineered wood flooring product, I probably would not do the bedroom areas. I wouldn't put it in the bathrooms. There's a lot of high-grade vinyls you can put in now that are reasonably priced.
What's your take on that with like the LVP, the luxury vinyl planks and stuff? Because some of that you can spend some good money on, and you know, people like the durability, and they frankly like the warm feel of the vinyl over the maybe the harder wood or in kitchens doing the LVP versus ceramic, because they can go, again, it's the nicer. And then if they do want to update, you're not ripping out ceramic, you can go in and replace easier.
I like the new vinyl floorings that are out. And I think especially if it's just a one tone ceramic tile, 12x12 tile, or 8x8 tile, I think those are becoming dated now.
Yeah.
And most people would prefer to have some type of a vinyl product or some type of a hardwood product or laminate product in the kitchen and the bath areas versus the old ceramic tile.
So if somebody's going to go invest their money in their property and they're going to do updates. I know from a sales perspective, you know, I think painting's important, you know, make sure the outside's buttoned up. I think inside painting's important, but if we're talking about picking and choosing, I haven't updated my house since 1990, and I've got to make a choice of where to place some money, right? Appraisal wise, where do you see the smart investments going? If you were to put them kind of in an order of, you know, if you had four things to do, this is what I would do first, second, third, and fourth, if we're just talking about looking at a possible place to update or upgrade.
Because there's so many different aspects to the home, I would probably pick rooms first.
Okay.
I'd go with kitchen, bath, master bedroom.
Right.
And then the main living area after that. The kitchen and bath, you know, it depends on how much funds you have to work with.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got $10,000 to drop into a kitchen and bath, then, and you're in a $200,000 neighborhood, you know, you're going to put granite, you're going to change out your floor coverings. Yeah.
Fixtures
are usually a fairly inexpensive
fix.
The whole thing too is how much can you do yourself?
Yeah.
You get more bang for your buck doing it yourself if you're able to do that.
But do it right if you do it yourself.
And do it right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're not, then you're going to have it done, and you're also going to limit what you can do.
Right. I know when I talk to people, you know, I mention to them that when people are going into houses and they're looking at them, I think master bath and kitchen is really important. Because that's it's a place people stay a lot. And then of course the master bath, because frankly, the owners of the house, that's where they're going. They don't care what their kids deal with as much as they care with what they deal with. Sorry guys, we got interrupted there by UPS, but, what I was talking about was, you know, again, you know, where to invest the money. And we were talking about going in the kitchen and the master bath. Kitchen I find is important because it's where the family meets. So, you know, whether or not we choose to sit there and put in granite is not as important as whether or not we update countertops if they're really dated. You know, doing some of the updates are important. Is the flooring, you know, it's like you're mentioning on tile, is it old, you know, 1980s tile, or is it something that's more up to date? Or are we getting carpet out of a, you know, kitchen? Things like that. Kitchen cabinets and door pulls, just giving a little update that way. I think easy updates, would you agree, is going in and attacking some of the lighting, you know, updating, getting rid of a lot of the brass lights and putting in stuff that's more of a, you know, common color, brushed nickel
or bronze.
Oiled bronze. Yeah.
Yes. I think probably the biggest bang for your buck and what most people are probably capable of doing themselves is painting.
Okay.
Paint costs have gone up as far as the per gallon.
Right.
But if your own whole intention is to get your house ready to sell for the next person to come in and look, the buyers coming in a lot of times don't recognize quality.
Right.
So whether you've used a $50 a gallon paint or whether you used a $30 a gallon of paint, they're not going to be able to tell.
Yeah.
And you're trying to update the house and spruce it up. Buy the $30 of paint. Paint it yourself. Do a great job. Tape everything. And it's money well spent.
But I love my wallpaper and my border. Should I get rid of that?
Well, if you drive around Wichita and if you were around 30 years ago and you looked at the number of wallpapering stores and where you could buy wallpaper and you look at today's market,
yeah,
wallpaper's getting harder and harder to find.
It is.
So that's got to show some, you know, it's got to show you that it's out the door a little bit.
Well, I know we're coming close to running out of time here. So, and I want to touch base on some of this insurance stuff. So, if you're listening to this, you're watching this, I'm just going to tell you guys, give me a call, or give Ross Lee a call as an appraiser. If you kind of have a question, we'll be able to sit there and guide you down the path on some of the things for updates and things to sit there and do. If you're in need of an appraisal, whether you're dealing with an estate situation, because a lot of states deal with it, if you're dealing with a divorce situation and need to get a valuation for divorce proceedings and stuff, give Ross Lee a call. His information will be tied to this whole podcast here. Insurance. We got 5 minutes left here to talk about insurance. And I do know that insurance is a big thing when people are buying properties. You're a little different than other insurance agents because you're an insurance broker, which allows you to look at multiple carriers versus somebody who just goes to a State Farm, as an example, and they just have their product. If you're to give advice to somebody that is buying a house and they're going to be insuring things, what do you have to say to them?
There's a lot of carriers out there, and there are a lot of carriers that are very good. Insurance is, you don't know what you're getting really, because nobody reads the fine print on the back 3 pages of the 30 pages of a policy.
Okay.
So what you really want to know is how they pay their claims.
Okay.
If you tried to save $300 on a homeowner's policy in a year, but at the same time, if that carrier, you have a claim 2 years down the road and you have to fight over that claim,
yep,
you've lost what you've tried to save because it's going to cost you more in the long run. Okay. So sometimes it's not about cost. It's more about the coverage you're getting, the agent you're getting. And with an independent agent, we're not governed by one company. All the carriers we write for, and I write for national carriers, they all want our business. So they will bend over backwards to take care of their claims.
Yep.
And that's an advantage sometimes to going with an insurance broker.
So we're here in a market where there's a lot of hail damage. And I think that roof coverage is a very misunderstood part of a insurance policy.
Correct.
And I don't think people get, you know, they'll sit there and say, well, I've got a $500 deductible. Then all of a sudden they've got an insurance claim and their deductible for their roof is $3,500. Why?
Most carriers have gone to wind and hail deductibles that are separate from their all peril. A lot of the times you can get a fixed dollar, like $1,000, $1,500, $2,500, $5,000. Mm-hmm. But they're also, a lot of the carriers use 1%, 2%, and 5%. So it's 1% of the dwelling, which would be what their coverage is. So if they have a $100,000 house, they're going to have a $1,000 deductible because it's based off the dwelling coverage.
But whenever I look at a policy, it always seems different. So, you know, let's say I paid $150,000 for my house. That's my house and my lot. My insurance policy says that I'm covering $185,000, which is just the dwelling. So they're saying my house is worth $185,000 regardless of my lot. And when those policies are there, it's not off of what I paid for the house or any of those aspects. It's off of what that coverage that's there that we find a lot of times where the insurance carrier is automatically upping us, it seems like. So can you take 2 seconds and explain what's happening or why what you pay for a house may be different from what your policy is stating the value of your house is?
You have three different values basically with homes. You have tax value, market value, or what you paid for the house, and then you have insurance value. Mm-hmm. Insurance value is what the carrier is willing to rebuild that house if it's completely destroyed, which typically in this area, in Wichita area, it's going to be either by a fire or a tornado.
Right.
It costs more to rebuild a house than it does to build it from the ground up, scratch new.
Okay.
Because you have demolition cost. If you have a partial loss, you have to adhere all the new part of the structure.
The codes and stuff.
Back into the original home, mm-hmm. and you have to match everything up. And so that drives costs up. Contractors cost more and charge more to rebuild a house.
Okay.
That's
good to know.
And basically the insurance carrier is who's paying for it.
Okay.
So they want to make sure that they have insured that home for the correct amount. Now, I will tell you that you can put 10 different carriers together and they're all going to have 10 different values for that house to insure it for. And that's just the way they all tweak the cost estimators to what works for their past experience.
So if you're sitting here listening to this, the kicker is to look at your policy, is to truly go over it with your carrier and make sure that, you know, do you have replacement cost on the things, replacement cost for the roof, not a prorated cost. What's your deductible, right?
Yes.
Is it a percentage-based deductible or is it an actual flat fee deductible? And then to make sure that like all insurance carriers want, you know, I want to handle not only your house, but your cars and anything else I can get my hands on. But the reality is there's values and benefits to those things. I might be more expensive on auto, but I'm less expensive on house. It's how everything balances out. Would you agree?
Correct.
And there's a good way to do that, again, by talking with a person like you and just at least going through your policies and getting an estimate of insurance cost.
It's true. And that's what an independent agent, we match the coverages to the customer.
Okay. Well, if you guys are still watching here, Ross's information here is going to be in this podcast. What's your number?
My
phone number.
My property group number for appraisals is 871-0747.
That's area code 316.
Area code 316. And then my insurance business is 316-260-3337.
Okay. And what is your website if they want to check you out?
It's under construction. It's been under construction for a little while. So I believe it's www.assetinsurancemanagement.net. I believe.
So in other words, call you.
Call me.
Yeah. Well, I know he'll do a good job. I've got insurance through Ross myself, and I know I refer a lot of people to him when it comes to home appraisals. And for all of you that are listening here, I really want to appreciate you for taking the time to listen in for Ross. I appreciate you for taking the time to sit down and talk with us. And for those of you that are watching this on YouTube or Facebook, guys, make sure that you like and share my pages. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. All of our podcasts are on our YouTube page, along with the rest of our series with our Cruising with Kirk or our Hometown Highlights. All that stuff is on there. So other than that, thank you for taking the time to spend with me. And if you have a home to sell or a home you want to buy, give me a call. Kirk Short, the Wichita Home Team. Remember, achieve your dreams with the Wichita Home Team. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.